A good yardstick to measure how far modern schooling has migrated from the education of the past is George Washington's upbringing in the middle 18th century. Although Washington descended from important families, his situation wasn't quite the easeful life that suggests. The death of his father left him at 11 without Ben Franklin's best rudder, and the practice of primogeniture, which vested virtually the entire inheritance in the first son in order to stabilize social class, compelled Washington to either face the future as a ward of his brother, an unthinkable alternative for George, or take destiny into his own hands as a boy. You probably already know how that story turned out, but since the course he pursued was nearly schoolless, its curriculum is worth a closer look. For the next few minutes, imagine yourself at school with Washington. George Washington was no genius. We know that from too many of his contemporaries to quibble. John Adams called him too illiterate, too unlearned, too unread for his station and reputation, close quote. Jefferson, his fellow Virginian, declared he liked to spend time, quote, chiefly in action, reading little. It was an age when everyone in Boston, even shoeblacks, knew how to read and count. It was a time when a working-class boy in a family of 13 like Franklin couldn't remember when he didn't know how to read. As a teenager, Washington loved two things, dancing and horseback riding. He pursued both with a passion that paid off handsomely when he became president. Large in physical stature, his appearance might have stigmatized him as awkward. Instead, by developing the agile strength of a dancer and an equestrian, he was able to communicate grace through his commanding presence, elan that counterpoised his large build at any gathering. Thanks to his twin obsessions, he met his responsibilities with the bearing of a champion athlete, which saved his life during the Revolution. In the midst of the fray, a British sharpshooter drew a bead on his target, but found himself unable to pull the trigger because Washington bore himself so magnificently. George Mercer, a friend, described Washington as a young man in the following way. Quote, he is straight as an Indian, measuring 6 feet 2 inches in his stockings and weighing 175 pounds. His frame is padded with well-developed muscles, indicating great strength. British military superiority, including the best available war-making technology, would have made hash of a brainless commander in spite of his admirable carriage, so we need to analyze the curriculum which produced America's Fabius, as he was called. Washington had no schooling until he was 11, no classroom confinement, no blackboards. He arrived at school already knowing how to read, write, and calculate about as well as the average college student today. If that sounds outlandish, turn back to Franklin's curriculum and compare it with the intellectual diet of a modern, gifted, and talented class. Full literacy wasn't unusual in the colonies or early republic. Many schools wouldn't admit students who didn't know reading and counting, because few schoolmasters were willing to take the time teaching what was so easy to learn. It was deemed a mark of depraved character if literacy hadn't been attained by the matriculating student. Even the many charity schools operated by churches, towns, and philanthropic associations for the poor would have been flabbergasted at the great hue and cry raised today about difficulties teaching literacy. American experience proved the contrary. In New England and the Middle Atlantic colonies, where reading was especially valued, literacy was universal. The printed word was also valued in the South, where literacy was common, if not universal. In fact, it was general literacy among all classes that spurred the explosive growth of colleges in 19th century America, where even ordinary folks hungered for advanced forms of learning. Following George to school at 11 to see what the schoolmaster had in store would reveal a skimpy menu of studies, yet one with a curious gravity: geometry, trigonometry, and surveying. You might regard that as impossible, or consider it was only a dumbed-down version of those things, some kid's game akin to the many simulations one finds today in schools for prosperous children: simulated city building, simulated court trials, simulated businesses, virtual realities to bridge the gap between adult society and the immaturity of the young. But if George didn't get the real thing, how do you account for his first job as official surveyor for Culpeper County, Virginia, only 2,000 days after he first hefted a surveyor's transit in school? For the next 3 years, Washington earned the equivalent of about $100,000 a year in today's purchasing power. It is probable his social connections helped this fatherless boy get the position. But in frontier society, anyone would be crazy to give a boy serious work unless he actually could do it. Almost at once, he began speculating in land. He didn't need a futurist to tell him which way the historical wind was blowing. By the age of 21, he had leveraged his knowledge and income into 2,500 acres of prime land in Frederick County, Virginia. Washington had no father as a teenager, and we know he was no genius, yet he learned geometry, trigonometry, and surveying when he would have been a fifth or sixth grader in our era. 10 years later, he had prospered directly by his knowledge. His entire life was a work of art in the sense that it was an artifice under his control. He eventually freed his slaves without being coerced to do so. Washington could easily have been the first king in America, but he discouraged any thinking on that score, and despite many critics, he was so universally admired, the seat of government was named after him while he was still alive. Washington attended school for exactly 2 years. Besides the subjects mentioned, at 12 and 13 and later, he studied frequently used legal forms like bills of exchange, tobacco receipts, leases, and patents. From these forms, he was asked to deduce the theory, philosophy, and custom which produced them. By all accounts, this steeping in grown-up reality didn't bore him at all. I had the same experience with Harlem kids 250 years later. Following a similar procedure in teaching them how to struggle with complex income tax forms, young people learn for this kind of guided introduction to serious things, I think. When that yearning is denied, schooling destroys their belief that justice governs human affairs. By his own choice, Washington put time into learning deportment, how to be regarded as a gentleman by other gentlemen. He copied a book of rules which had been used at Jesuit schools for over a century, and with that, his observations and what advice he could secure gathered his own character. Here's Rule 56 to let you see the flavor of the thing. Quote, "Associate yourself with men of good quality if you esteem your own reputation." Close quote. Sharp kid. No wonder he became president. Washington also studied geography and astronomy on his own, gaining a knowledge of regions, continents, oceans, and heavens. In light of the casual judgment of his contemporaries that his intellect was of normal proportions, you might be surprised to hear that by 18 he had devoured all the writings of Henry Fielding, Tobias Smollett, and Daniel Defoe, and read regularly the famous and elegant Spectator. He also read Seneca's Morals, Julius Caesar's Commentaries, and the major writing of other Roman generals like the historian Tacitus. At 16, the future president began writing memos to himself about clothing design, not content to allow something so important to be left in the hands of tradesmen. Years later, he became his own architect for the magnificent estate of Mount Vernon. While still in his 20s, he began to experiment with domestic industry where he might avoid the vagaries of international finance in things like cotton or tobacco. First, he tried to grow hemp for medicinal purposes, which didn't work out. Next, he tried flax. That didn't work either. At the age of 31, he hit on wheat. In 7 years, he had a little wheat business with his own flour mills and hired agents to market his brand of flour. A little later, he built fishing boats. 4 years before the declaration was written, he was pulling in 9 million herring a year. No public school in the United States is set up to allow a George Washington to happen. Washingtons in the bud stage are screened, browbeaten, or bribed to conform to a narrow outlook on social truth. Boys like Andrew Carnegie, who begged his mother not to send him to school, and was well on his way to immortality and fortune at the age of 13, would be referred today for psychological counseling. Thomas Edison would find himself in special ed until his peculiar genius had been sufficiently tamed. Anyone who reads can compare what the American present does in isolating children from their natural sources of education, modeling them on a niggardly last, to what the American past proved about human capabilities. The effect of the forced schooling institution's strange accomplishment has been monumental. No wonder history has been outlawed.